championship on the line right here. He's going for the corner. He's got it.
Hello and welcome to 4th and 5, your Longhorn Nation podcast. I'm your host, Will Bazer, and I'm joined alongside by Darius Terrell, as always. You guys are listening to the Hornscast channel, which you guys can find on any podcasting platform out there. Today we're going to be going over some team news with the university's response to the players, our thoughts on that, and also a lot of conferences kicking out their non-conference schedules in favor of just plain old conference play. Take a look at how Texas and LSU's game is on the line and potential SEC planning to hopefully keep that around. Then we're going to talk about the fact that 2020 potentially is not going to happen and how that is going to affect the 2021 recruiting class, and also go over the newly released rankings for the top 100 players in the 2022 class and those players from Texas. So Darius, let's go ahead and start off with some of the bigger news that happened that broke this past Monday. It was dumped on Monday, which means the university was feeling pretty good about it, actually. The university's response to the players' requests.
They voiced their concerns about, you know, some things they felt on campus weren't representative of a very, I guess, inclusive, you know, environment or so. So they felt uncomfortable. They voiced their concerns about everything, right? So.
And a few of those concerns and requests were to rename a few buildings, including Robert Lee Moore Hall, Painter Hall, Littlefield Hall, and James Hogg Auditorium, the replacement of statues with more diverse statues on campus designed by artists and sculptors who are people of color, the inclusion of modules for incoming freshmen discussing the history of racism on campus, for example, the Texas Cowboys minstrel shows, and providing racial injustice awareness. On top of that, an outreach program for inner cities, specifically targeted to people of color. Some athletic actions were more diversity in the Hall of Fame, to include a permanent black athletic history exhibit, UT department donating part of their profits or part of their revenue to black organizations, and the renaming of an area of the stadium in honor of Julius Whittier, the first black football player at Texas, and then the one that was the most controversial being the replacement of the Eyes of Texas as the alma mater due to the debut of that song during a minstrel show in 1903. So the university responded. They took their time. Herzl talked with the players. He talked with alumni, including people like Joe Jamail's family. And, you know, Tom Herman, in the midst of all of it, was really pushing to get some of these changes through. And here's what they came up with. The University of Texas on Monday said that they will be placing a statue of Hyman M. Sweat, the civil rights activist and the first African-American to be accepted into the Texas Law School in the midst of the Jim Crow era after a very long legal battle. They renamed the Robert L. Moore Building to the Physics, Math, and Astronomy Building.
A fun fact, that was the previous name of it before they changed it to the Robert, was it L. Moore thing in the first place. So
they took it off and put it back to what it was. Then putting a multi-million dollar investment from athletics revenue into on and off campus programs that support black students, a pledge to bring in more black faculty, the promise to honor the precursors, who were the first black undergraduates to attend University of Texas, by commissioning a new monument to be put on the East Mall, erect a statue of Julius Whittier, the Longhorns' first black football player, and letterman at DKR Memorial Stadium. And Earl Campbell, in a recent interview, said that he hopes that it's bigger than his. Then, one of the biggest things, speaking of Earl Campbell, a renaming of Joe Jamail Field to Campbell Williams Field in honor of Texas's two great Heisman winners, who also happen to be African-American. So that is probably the biggest one the biggest change that really came out of this, on top of the multi-million dollar investment into black organizations. The last one was the acknowledgments and the promise to educate about the debut of the Eyes of Texas. So those were what the university pledged to do. Darius, let's first talk about one of the biggest complaints about all this, which was from some of the student athletes saying, well, when different donors want something to happen, it happens immediately, but when we ask for it, it takes time. I honestly am glad that they took their time with this. They didn't rush out a solution that would potentially be disastrous, right? If they went through and really hurried a decision, it could have been not enough for these players, or it could have been so much so that it went a little bit overboard.
If nothing else, I think the young student athletes, so quick fun story. When I was at Texas with Mac Brown, we would always, not always, but at least every year, every summer I was there, we would attend a couple of events. So we would be at either Red McCombs Ranch or some rich guy's house or whatever. And Will, I got to be honest, I never understood it. I told Coach Brown, I'm like, why do you want me here meeting all these people, shaking these people's hand who wouldn't be talking to me right now if I didn't play football here? And I remember his response one time was like, Darius, you'll understand one day. And I'm like, I don't get it. So what these players, I feel like what they got to find out a little bit about this, like you said, they were complaining. They felt like, okay, well, we're not moving fast enough. Well, so there were some names changed, right, on some buildings and stuff, but there were also some names that remained, right? Mm-hmm. Was it the Little Fields? Ain't that the practice field, if I'm not mistaken, or that's the track or something, like the Little Fields, the Hogs, aren't those families, they still play a big part in everything, right?
Yes.
So they're right in thinking, so yeah, money makes the world go round. Pretty much the bottom line of the dollar is, it's really important. I think that personally, I know I was excited to see, one, Texas did respond and they did make a lot of changes, but I was excited to see, and who's this guy named Hartzell, Jay Hartzell, the interim president. Mm-hmm. I thought the interim president did an awesome job with everything.
Oh, yeah.
And then to see it be co-signed by the executive vice president, the senior vice president, all these names on here, Chris Del Conte, Leonard Moore, all these names signed or co-signed as well. I just thought it was, he knows that he's at the University of Texas. I believe Hartzell is a guy. He's a guy that went to the University of Texas. He understands burnt orange. He bleeds burnt orange. So he understands that we need to make some things change, you know, for these kids. But at the same time, I have to take care of this other stuff off the field as well. He did a great job, in my opinion, of in any disagreement or negotiation, right, Will? The best deals are when each side gives a little bit. I thought that guy did a really, really good job with this whole deal. And if you look at the responses on Twitter, just, you know, off the top of my head, Jared Wiley, Josh Thompson, you know, Overshone.
Caden Stearns, yeah.
Juwan Mitchell, former players, Tim Crowder, you know, Calvin Anderson.
Charles Amenahu, who was very vocal about
it. Yeah, everybody was excited about it. And, you know, those players that were a part of this, they will go down in history. I had no clue. I didn't know who Julius Whittier was, and I was there to, you know, I was on campus. I mean, this stuff, the education part about it is, and I understand too. I hear them talking about education, talking about it and doing it are two different things. But yeah, if you can go about really, if you can educate folks, man, and folks are able to spread that knowledge and teach other folks how to look up information for themselves, I think we're all better for it. And the thing about history is, we, instead of hiding it and trying to modify it, if we would address things, you know, exactly as they were, that's how we make progress, right? We don't make progress by, in my opinion, sweeping stuff under the rug. Address stuff head on, understand that something was wrong or something was okay then, it's not okay now. That's how we move forward. So I was really impressed with everybody on this one. I was satisfied with it, and I think a lot of people share that sentiment on every side of the spectrum.
Right. I think we should go over two major changes here. Well, three. I think one, the biggest change here that is actually going to do potential good is the $1 million investment in on and off campus organizations that help out Black students. Mm-hmm. I think that is a huge donation. That's going to be a lot of money that goes to a lot of really good causes. But the two ones that are, you know, affect athletics the most, the Joe Jamail Field being renamed to the Campbell Williams Field. And that was actually proposed by Dar Jamail and his brothers Randall and Rob, who wrote a letter to the university's president at the time, Jay Hertzel, to change Joe Jamail Field. In their letter, they said, "This offer is conditioned on their being named as soon as possible. Although symbolic, this change would show the entire university community, its students, faculty, and alumni, as well as the public, that doing right involves promoting justice as a first priority. It will demonstrate by action the university leads, not follows. Given the outcry, public health, and social crisis we face, please take this action immediately for maximum impact, certainly before news media or others outside demands make the honors seem reactive. The university is best served by showing strength and initiative on these issues. So basically, they wanted this to be a proactive act to get African-American representation on campus as soon as possible. They wanted to make sure that it didn't seem reactive to outside sources, but it is a symbolic action by the University of Texas to promote progress. And it makes sense to use two of the best football players to ever come through Texas, who also happen to be African American, as representation for the good that African Americans can do for the university and the football program specifically.
Yeah, there was there needed to be some change around campus. There wasn't any representation anywhere. So yeah, it's awesome. The players, everybody has something. Not just the players, everybody involved has something to be proud of here.
Right.
And as far as the song, the Eyes of Texas, I mean, everybody didn't sing the song anyway in the first place, and it was never really a big deal. I don't remember it ever being talked about as a big deal. So players aren't going to be required to sing the song, but at the same time, we never really were. I mean, of course, you know, coach standing there, you know, they want you to hold your horns up and everything, but I don't know. I guess the difference now is instead of having to stand there, you know, and mouth or just rock side to side, you actually have permission now. Or in Juwan Mitchell's case, he wants to run off the field. So I guess now we also know, too, what that was really about during the season when he ran off the field after the game. He didn't want to sing the song. So this has been going on for a while. But, they said if you don't want to sing it, you don't got to stay. Cool. If you want to stand there, everybody, as long as – like I saw some folks, even on our board, on the Brainiacs board, saying, well, I'm going to boo players if they want to run off the field. That's the only thing, okay? So if we can respect everybody's stance on it, then it's going to be fine. But if folks want to boo people for singing it or boo people for not singing it, that's when it's going to remain a problem. So everybody needs to kind of, you know,
chill.
Yeah,
completely agree, man. I think that there is a lot of gray area around the song. Yes, the tune it's sung to and the debut of it are obviously not great, right? They should not be celebrated. But the fact is that there's a lot of historical, if you want to assign racism to it now, it's sort of a part of a historical fallacy called presentism, which is, you know, assigning present day intention on a historical act. So, look, I'm getting ahead of myself, but fact is that there is a lot of gray area around the song. So it's not a clear cut case by any measure. It can be argued in any manner of ways.
I don't know if it's so much, you know, I mean, like you said, the word you used, was it presentism? Mm-hmm. I think it was more just, it's from my point of, again, when you see that the song seems like it didn't originate from a place. You see what I'm saying? Like, it's not necessarily like saying, that's racist now. I mean, it just the entire, just like the Star Spangled Banner. Have you seen the full version of Star Spangled Banner?
No.
Like, we only sing a part of it. Like,
right.
Like, I get you, but.
The Eyes of Texas was written by two students trying to create an alma mater for Texas, wanted to poke fun at the current university president. The unfortunate side being when they finally created it, the next big concert for campus was the minstrel show put on by the Cowboys. Show. Right. I mean, so basically the premise behind the song and the generation of the song is these two students wanted to create their own fight song for Texas, just like Harvard, Princeton, and Yale had. I don't think they were meaning to say, you know, I don't think the message behind them, and I can't speak for them as people, was to really disparage black people. I think really what it was is these people wanted to present this song in front of important people at the university at a very, at the time, important fundraising function that just so happened to be very, very racist. But at the time, they took every avenue afforded to them to get what they wanted, which was a fight song for the University of Texas. That just happened to, unfortunately, be the way it happened, right?
Right, but just from the minority point of view, at the point, at the time when the song was made, there were no minorities around.
Right.
And again, we weren't a part of it. So to be singing it now in the spirit of, you know, this tradition, it's a tradition we were never a part of. So that's why some guys, I mean, just, and I understand some folks were never going to get on the same page about it. It's just if folks can respect other people's views on things without criticizing them or wanting to pressure them, then everything's going to be fine. But I mean, I understand both sides. I mean, I get it.
Yeah, it's, you took the words right out of my mouth. As long as people aren't demonized for singing it or not singing it, perfectly fine. Go about your business. I don't think the song, personally, and this is just my personal opinion, I don't think the song needs to be changed. I don't think it needs to be replaced. I know other people have very strong feelings one way or the other. But as long as we respect each other's opinions and just say, all right, well, I disagree with you, and that's that, I don't think there's a right or wrong. This is not a black or white issue. No pun intended.
No. So, yeah, it just takes some maturity.
Yeah. So this, again, was, I believe, and this is a very good response by the university. We're glad they took their time, and it really hit on almost every single issue that the players had. And honestly, it is one of the first times that players of any school have really stood up to an administration and actually won something. There was Northwestern who even tried to unionize, but that got kind of foiled. This is one of the few times in the NCAA's history or in college athletics history that this has actually happened. It's an interesting moment. So let's go ahead and talk about something else that is going to be one of the first things that happens in college football history, which is playing during a pandemic. Now, the last time they did that was in 1918, but we're in a different era now in terms of college athletics. There's a lot of money flowing in and out of it. So college athletic departments are trying to keep as much of the revenue going as possible. And that means not pushing back the season. They want a fall season. I don't get that. I think they could possibly push it back to the spring. I know the JUCO is already doing it. I know the Ivy League is already doing that. There's a lot of other places that are happening, and I think that might end up being what actually happens in the end. But for now, there are conferences that are saying that they're only playing in conference games. No out-of-conference games allowed. That is right now, so far, the Pac-12 and the Big Ten, with the ACC looking like it might be the next one to follow suit. And the reason that these conferences are going through with these modifications and others are considering them is a growing belief inside the industry, inside college athletics, that different conferences, that conferences need to establish a uniform testing and tracing protocol for the pandemic among member schools. So the G5, and this is going to be very expensive, so G5 leagues and programs probably wouldn't be able to replicate this process. And with the uniformity, that means also other conferences might not be on the same pages. So to enforce that and make sure that they are being as quote-unquote careful as possible, they're saying no out-of-conference games. Now, Longhorn fans are kind of mildly freaking out about this because that means the Baton Rouge game is no longer happening. But Darius, according to SB Nation's Stephen Godfrey, unlike the Big Ten and Pac-12, there is no consensus among other schools regarding the elimination of non-conference games. Amongst the Big 12, the SEC, and the ACC, there's still a bunch of infighting on whether or not to keep the games from out-of-conference. I'm sure ACC, you know, teams like Georgia Tech and South Carolina, or no, Clemson, and teams like that, Miami, Florida State, really want to keep those out-of-conference rivalry games alive. So the SEC right now is the one that's sort of in the middle of the Big 12 and the ACC in terms of the important out-of-conference games. So what the SEC is doing is going to be really important for Texas. And they have three potential plans. Go with the Big Ten and the Pac-12 and just eliminate all non-conference games. Add a ninth SEC game with a cross-division opponent. I mean, they have it. They have the most teams of any conference. Well, I guess tied for other conferences. Or what the really interesting one, the really interesting potential plan being a Big 12 ACC alliance. Now, according to Stephen Godfrey, multiple schools have confirmed a desire amongst the athletic directors in the league to preserve as much of the non-conference schedule as possible. According to him, the SEC is currently trying to maintain their games with the ACC while also crafting an agreement currently with the Big 12 in hopes of giving every SEC program one non-conference game. So in addition to Vanderbilt at Kansas, Tennessee at Oklahoma, Ole Miss versus Baylor, and of course Texas at LSU, that would mean opening the doors for games like Texas Tech versus Texas A&M, since both of them lost the Pac-12 out-of-conference game. Another one is Bama. Who is Bama going to play in the ACC or in the Big 12? It's an interesting dilemma that this alliance could potentially form. So that is the last hope Texas and LSU have for playing this year currently, is either you're just pushing everything back to spring or this Big 12 ACC alliance. Darius, what are your thoughts on the potential of all this?
I understand and appreciate, you know, the SEC, Big 12, ACC trying to figure something out. But my thing is, I mean, well, like if I'm a team like if I'm Iowa State, for example, I'm trying to compete for and another thing we have to ask about too, how the heck are we going to do the bowl games and stuff like that this season?
Right.
But for example, we do the Big 12 SEC alliance. Like if I'm Iowa State, you're not putting Alabama on my schedule. I didn't agree to that. Like, that's not, you know what I'm saying? Like, I don't.
Yeah, who wants to play Alabama?
The idea is good, but I think the simplest solution is going to be following suit with what the Big Ten and, whoever the other conference was that did it, Pac-12, was,
is going to
be
going just Alabama. Straight.
Yeah, like why would Kansas? That's no, not doing that. I'm not doing it. But I think what's going to happen is we're going to end up, it's going to be straight conference games, man. I think so. And you'll have a conference champion in every conference. And an idea I do have, Will, is if there's a year to extend the playoff, college football playoff, wouldn't this be the year to do it?
Exactly.
You know what I'm saying? Wouldn't this be the year to let eight teams be in? You're trying to generate some extra revenue. But my personal opinion,
especially since will be later on in the season, allowing you for some time to deal with the pandemic.
If there was ever a year to go to a 16-team tournament or something, this would be the year, and this is your excuse to experiment with it. You know what I'm saying? Right. Like I could, you know. But I, in my opinion, it's going to be straight conference games, man. And if we play in the fall, and from there, I think it's simple, man. I think it's just going to get canceled, and we'll see Texas and LSU, for example, get rescheduled for like 2033 or something. And that sucks. Especially because I thought, you know, hey, I thought Texas was going to be LSU in Baton Rouge this year, and that would be a huge boost in recruiting and morale and everything, excitement. But it's just bad luck. But I don't see any way, especially with this time crunch that we have now, especially with camp needing to start. Like, for example, football, we're supposed to start practice on August 3rd, full pads. That's what, 2 weeks? That's about 16 days, Will. We're going to figure this out, all these games, and get this done in time. I don't see it happening this year. Just my personal opinion.
Yeah, it's a lot that needs to happen in a very little amount of time. It's an interesting idea. I really hope it goes through. But we still even know if a season's going to happen, right? We don't know where we're going to be in 2 weeks because apparently everything just fluctuates like crazy. And then even in the middle of the season, we don't know what's going to happen. We have no idea.
And when you factor in, you know, the time when somebody does test positive, the quarantine, like imagine we have the season now and Texas is 7-1 and about to play for the Big 12 championship. And, 2 days for the championship, Sam Ehlinger tests positive for Corona. Are we going to postpone the game 2 weeks? Like, you see what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Like, it's just, I don't see. And then what is that going to do? Folks are going to want their money back that paid for tickets. Like, it's so much stuff that can happen. So much headache. It makes the most sense, man, just to scale back.
Right.
And then if we get through the season and it looks good, then now we have the opportunity to expand on the playoffs and stuff like that, because we have the fact that this pandemic has happened. This is the perfect time to be able to do all of these things and try some different ideas and theories out if we are able to have a season.
Right. I wasn't even thinking about that playoff idea until you brought it up. That's a really good idea.
Yeah, like this could be the most interesting season ever for a lot of different reasons, and it could shape what college football looks like for us moving forward.
Exactly. I think
so. We'll see.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess what you're, my girlfriend the other day was asking, when will we know when we will actually be having a game or not in Baton Rouge, because we have tickets to go to New Orleans and to go to the game. And I was like, probably 2 weeks before it actually happens.
Yeah, I think they're going to give y'all the credit, man. I think y'all going to have to set that trip up about 14 years from now.
Yeah, exactly.
See if the hotel accredits you. I don't see how it's going to happen, especially when, aren't there still states with travel bans? They don't want people, like,
Yeah, like, what's going to go on with Florida? Like, Florida is basically the epicenter of the world right now.
And isn't Los Angeles shut back down again? Like, I don't see it. I don't see it happening.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, it's going to be interesting. It's definitely going to be interesting to see how all this plays out. That is, we've been, throughout all this, kind of letting you listeners know what the potential big factors or big things that could happen, like the conference is saying, whether or not players can come in and all that stuff way back in, what was that, May? And it actually happened the next week. Stuff like this. This is something to keep an eye on, and hopefully it happens.
So I don't know if you wanted to get into it, but I mean, did you want to talk about the potential of things if the season did get moved to the spring?
I think let's go ahead and cross that bridge when we get there.
Okay.
Because I really want to get into this next topic with recruiting. So with the potential for no 2020 season, there's a lot of whispering going on in the recruiting world about what the 2021 class should do. Different kids right now are being told they should commit early or reclassify due to the uncertainty of the 2020 season even happening. And the reason behind this being that because the 2020 season might not happen, these seniors are going to be able to use, the ones that haven't already used their red shirts are going to be able to use their red shirts. That means that potentially there are less spots available on the roster if the NCAA doesn't allow for a one-year expanded roster. Now, what that means is to secure your spot on the team for next year and secure your roster spot or your scholarship spot, you should commit now. Or get on campus ASAP. It's already happened right now with Tony Grimes, the number one cornerback in the 2021 class, reclassified to 2020. Is going to be enrolling in UNC on August 1st. There are other players who want to reclassify if they possibly can or are committing ASAP. So that's a potential thing that could happen. Now, Darius, what do you think? The 2020 season being canceled, how do you think that would affect this 2021 class?
As far as, so with what I was thinking, you brought up guys that haven't used their red shirt and things like that. I think we would see a similar type of deal like we saw with sports like softball and baseball that happened in spring, where, like, for Texas softball, for example, and we talked about it a little bit before the show, they had to make a decision on seniors who they wanted to keep. They had to decide. So I think it was three seniors that ended up transferring. One went to UNT. You know, they went different places, but they also decided to keep Miranda Ellis, who's the top pitcher, Shannon Rose. They decided to keep three or four players, but they also let three or four other seniors walk. And I think you likely would see a similar type of situation with football, where you would see teams, just depending on the player and the position, they would decide to, you know, honor one senior's scholarship and tell the next one that they probably need to find somewhere else to go if they want to play. And that's the only way I can see those numbers balancing out. So if it's a guy like a Denzel Okafor, for example, you would likely see him, since he's the premium position he plays, they would find a way to keep him. But a guy, just throwing out names, a guy that maybe hasn't played much, like I don't know if he's a senior right now, but say a Daniel Carson or something, they probably would let that guy go somewhere else. That's how the nature of the beast would be in that situation, in my opinion. As far as the high school kids go, I think it's important. So the folks that have, to have a lot of options. I think I agree with the sentiment of maybe, you know, locking your spot up. But if you don't know where you want to go, I think just like with the players deciding who they want to keep, schools are going to decide who they want to take their time and wait on. I think the schools are going to communicate to these guys whether or not they're going to wait around for them as well. I don't know. So, like, with Tony Grimes reclassifying up to 2020, that's great. But, like, a lot of guys, most guys can't do that. They don't have their academics in order to be able to do that. If you have that option, that's amazing. I mean, I don't know why he wouldn't have done it earlier. But for some other folks, like the example, like Mason Smith, the D-lineman out of Louisiana, tweeted out that, oh, no season, he might as well reclassify. Well, Mason Smith likely can't reclassify up. He'll have to reclassify back. And what good would that really do him when he already has all of these options? You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So it's just, I don't,
it would,
it's a lot
probably
of gray area
be
there.
Four stars, lower four stars, mid four stars, who would try to reclassify up in order to really solidify their spot if they can. Or a three star.
Yeah, but even like if you remember it, like in Arizona with Jake Smith and Bijan, like in the state of Arizona, you can't
right
graduate early or transfer. So it's just like it's so much gray area, man. It's so much confusion going on. I think the NCAA is going to end up granting a just an exception for that upcoming year. I think you're going to see expanded rosters in college football, despite money being lost due to games being lost.
Right. I think also one thing that could happen with, let's say they don't expand the rosters, is teams like UNT, UTSA, Appalachian State, teams that usually don't have the full 85 scholarships or even close. They, you know, most teams don't have full 85. They usually sit around 80 right. to 83.
Right.
But the teams that aren't even anywhere close that are sitting at 70, they won't have to kick any player. And they're going to be recruiting off of, you know, the roster spots that are being lost for teams like Texas and Bama mm-hmm. and all those other schools. And they're going to be also able to take a full 2021 class. So they're going to be going into the 2021 season with a loaded roster.
Right. All of a sudden, they're thinking they can have the best year they've had in, you know, in years at a place like that.
SMU, and, yeah.
Right. So I just think it's just so many sides of it, you know, for so many different people. It's really complicated. It's really complex. And it's just, we have so much uncertainty right now still. Like, I still can't believe I wake up every morning. I'm like, we're in the middle of a pandemic and there's no like end in sight. Like,
right.
Is this really happening? Like, really?
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah. It's going to be interesting to see how that all shakes out in terms of what happens to the 2021 class. I'm really liking the idea that a lot of these recruits are going to start committing early. I think you're going to see a huge wave of commitments in August. I think as players start to realize, hey, you know, the season might not happen, or hey, there's going to be a lot of redshirting due to fewer games, and that means I should probably lock up my spot so that, because there's going to be less spots available, especially seeing as, you know, the entire 2020 class might become your, you know, pseudo 2021 class.
And will we also, whenever this does get cleared up, will we see the biggest transfer portal year ever in college football
exactly.
history? Because so many kids went to schools that they never physically been on campus before. Like, I had no clue about any of this stuff, you know? So it's just the ripple effect is going to be fascinating.
It's going to be, like I said, you know, these G5 schools recruiting off of P5 school rosters. P5 schools might be recruiting off of each other's rosters in the meantime. I mean, it's really not a secret. I guess it is a sort of secret, but teams still try to talk to other players who they feel like are iffy about transferring between schools.
How do you think Mike Williams ended up at LSU after they didn't recruit him out of high school and he transferred to Texas?
Right.
How would he all of a sudden, oh, I have a scholarship at LSU now a year later? Like, that didn't just
happen, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's not going to stop, but it actually might accelerate.
It's going to be fascinating, man. It's going to be fascinating. And good luck to the NCAA trying to keep up with enforcing, you know, sanctions and stuff like that, because it's about to be crazy.
Right, right. So let's go ahead and get on to the next topic at hand, which is the top 100 in the 2022 class being released by 24/7. Now, Darius, you have your own list. I believe it was 25 or 50 kids in the 2022 class that you've ranked.
Mm-hmm. And my list is better, way better.
Of course, of course.
No bias involved there at all.
Yeah, I'm sure. I'm sure, Darius. But let's go ahead and take a look at what Texas players made the top 100 in the 2022 class for 24/7. Now, and also let's go into where Texas stands with these players, right? Because this is what everybody wants to know. It's not, okay, how good are these players, but how good are these players and are they going to Texas? Mm-hmm. That's what the entire recruiting industry is about. Let's talk about number one, Quinn Ewers. Quinn Ewers is the number one 22 player in the nation for 24/7. And he was also number one on your list. Darius, what makes Ewers so good?
That's a kid that, I mean, he was a kid that was on their JV as a freshman, and we were hearing about him because we played South Lake the year before as well. I've seen him in person twice now. I think for his age, he's as comfortable. He's got as much pocket presence for a high school kid I've seen at that age, outside of a guy like Kyler Murray. But, I mean, his poise, you know, even when things are going well, when they're not going well, I think it's tremendous. Will, his arm talent is natural. You know, it can't be taught. The touch, he knows how to change up. He can fastball, he can softball it. It's impressive. Okay, and his accuracy, he's able to do it from the pocket, or if things break down, he can get outside the pocket. He's not a dual threat. Okay, he's a guy that can move the chains for you when he needs to, but even on the run, he's a weapon, he's deadly accurate. And I mean, at this stage, in my opinion, there's not a QB in Texas in that class that compares right now. And I think, barring injury or, you know, something crazy happening, Quinn, you know, Ewers is a lock. That's a future first round draft pick there at quarterback.
Right. Where do you think Texas is sits with him right now, because I've been hearing a lot of Sooner talk for him.
So, as everybody knows, Oklahoma did just get a commitment from Caleb Williams, who is, you know, what's Caleb Williams? You know, he's number one quarterback in the 2021 class, mm-hmm. right? So, I don't know. I understand, like, I'm not saying, of course, you know, he's not going to be afraid of any competition. Again, Quinn Ewers is a bad guy.
Oklahoma pulls in number one five-star quarterbacks like it's no big deal, because I mean, it makes sense, because they have two Heismans in a row, and then another guy who was a Heisman finalist, and all of them go in the first or second round of the NFL. Yeah, it makes sense. If I'm a five-star quarterback, Oklahoma's a place I have to look.
But here's the thing about that position. That's the only position, only one plays at a time. So Oklahoma's going to go into the year with a redshirt freshman, Spencer Rattler. So by the time Quinn would arrive, Rattler will either he might be gone if he's that good as a redshirt sophomore, but likely he's on campus as a redshirt junior. You got Caleb Williams, who would have been on campus already for a year and got a redshirt year in, and then you think you're going to step in as a true freshman. You're going to sit behind Rattler, and then you have to compete with Williams, who will have had a full year on you that spring. Quarterbacks, that doesn't usually happen. You know what I'm saying? Especially with a guy that's the top ranked guy. So I think him committing, Caleb Williams committing to Oklahoma does nothing but help Texas. And while I think, you know, Oklahoma is probably was his leader at the time, and he's familiar with Oklahoma, he's familiar with Texas, I think you still got a long ways to go there for Ewers. And I would still be very wary of schools like Ohio State, Alabama, you know, Michigan. So Texas is still going to have their hands full here, and he still might like Oklahoma. But I think he's wide open right now.
Right. I think it's like most five-star players, it's going to be a little bit of a wait. Now, he's a quarterback, and those guys usually commit early, around August, September, October, so that they can start becoming the bell cow of the class. So it's going to be interesting to see whether he waits or whether he, you know, becomes a guy who's like Jalen Milroe or Hudson Card, where they just commit early. There's not a lot of movement right now around him, though. And the next player on this list is at number eight,
number
eight overall is Caleb Burton, and he was number 20 on your list. Now, Caleb Burton is a guy who I think he's probably a field side wide receiver, although he is very good at high pointing the ball. You could probably put about, 20 more pounds on him by the time he gets 30 pounds by the time. He's got some good speed, but I don't think he's the number one wide receiver in the nation.
Caleb Burton's a bad guy, but he's a small guy. Caleb Burton's about 5'10", 5'9.5", 5'10". He's probably about 160 pounds right now. He's light.
So he's
he's not 6 foot. He's not 6 foot. But I do think he has the versatility. He can play inside or outside, similar to a guy like Keytron Jackson in the 2021 class.
Caleb's
electric. He can get
Garrett Wilson type player.
Garrett Wilson, similar type of player. I think Garrett's a tier above, but Caleb's a bad guy. And 2/24/7 thinks he's the top receiver in the nation right now. Of course, it's really early. That's always subject to change. Personally, I'm a big Armani Winfield fan who didn't make the top 100, unless I missed it on looking at it at a glance. But Caleb Burton's a guy that's got inside outside versatility. I think he's more of a slot guy, but that's to be determined. And unfortunately for Texas right now, it doesn't seem like he don't have any interest in Texas at all, despite being from Del Valle,
which is right outside of Austin. It's another one of those players who, it just doesn't make sense. He's just right there. He's in your backyard. Why aren't you pulling
They did offer him. He's got an offer, but Oklahoma offered him before Texas did. And sometimes I don't get it. But and Del Valle, that's done a good job. They've got Caleb Burton's dad is a coach on that staff as well. It's part of probably why he's there and in the Lake Travis or something. But they've done a great job as well of getting other talented kids. They got some talented young guys in that class, in that program. So if Texas could get in and breakthrough at Del Valle, that could pay off for him in the future. But I don't think Caleb Burton is looking at the Longhorns very much right now, unfortunately.
Let's hope that changes, because it would be another McCutcheon situation or Garrett Wilson type situation, where it's a guy in your backyard and he goes to a school that you're going to be playing in the future.
Mm-hmm.
The next player on the list is Devin Campbell out of Bowie in Arlington, sitting at a reported 6'4", 265. Darius, what do you think? He looks pretty athletic on film.
I think Devin's a beast. He's a guy that I talked to. I had an interview up on Devin, I want to say last month. But he's a guy that he's from Arlington Bowie. He's from the area. He's a guy that hasn't even been playing offensive line very long. I think he's likely a right tackle or interior guy at the next level, despite his athleticism. Because he's not that tall. He's not 6'4". He's probably about 6'2.5", 6'3". But if you watch that tape, again, Devin Campbell, I have never seen an offensive lineman outrunning the wide receivers and stuff, getting downfield to get blocked. So he's a freak of nature, and I think Texas is going to have to fight everybody for him, but I do think he's got a strong interest in the Longhorns. That's going to be a Texas OU LSU type of battle right there.
Yeah.
And that's a big time
on top
player.
Of that, it's not just that he's fast. This guy has a hell of a first punch. This dude has a very strong and heavy hand that I've seen on film that just takes down a guy. On top of that, when he gets on top of you, he's kind of stuck on you, especially on a pull.
Yeah, at this level, no. When he gets his hands on folks, it's over. It's over. But no, I am very high on Devin Campbell. He's my top wide receiver, top offensive lineman in that class right now. And that's another big time class in the state of Texas.
That would be a hell of a wide receiver right there. Right. He was number three.
He might
be able to
play tight end. Overall, yes.
So the next player on this list at number 13 is Malik Cilia. Is that right? Cilia?
Cilia.
Malik
Cilia.
He was number 8 on your list. And from the looks of it, this guy is just incredibly fluid and athletic. He's a defensive lineman out of Katy, Texas. And again, when I look at his film, what I see is a fluid, legit 6'5 defensive end.
Absolutely.
This kid is a guy who you get into your program and you just put him at whatever spot you can, because he needs a little bit of polish for sure, but he flashes greatness.
Yeah, he's got the upside. He's one of those guys. When you find pass rushers are at a premium, okay? And let me a quick fun fact about Cilia. As a sophomore at 6'5", 215, or whatever he is, he ran a 200-meter dash for Katy's varsity. That's a defensive end running the 200, okay? He's legit 6'5", 215, 220 already. He's got about a 35, 36 inch vertical jump. Now he's raw. You know, he has no technique. But you know, and as far as get off and things like that, but all of the tools are there for him to be a guy that in the future ends up being. I feel like I don't throw it around that much, but just like with Quinn Ewers, get Malik Sylla into a college program. Apparently A&M, he's high on A&M right now, and A&M has a track record with defensive ends. Let's just be honest about it. They do. Get him into a program, get some weight on that guy. That's a guy that ends up being about 6'6", about 265 pounds, and can bend the edge. That's a first round pick.
Right.
I think he's got that type of upside.
Yeah. And the next guy is a guy who is not quite that type of a pass rusher, but he is a solid defensive end. He could be a 5-tech or anywhere even into a 3-tech at the next level. That is Amari Abor, who right now is at the number 19 in the 2022 class overall.
Mm-hmm.
Darius, what do you think of him?
So they've got Amari as the fifth best player in Texas. And so understand, they've got seven players from Texas in their top 24.
Which means they're all five stars.
Five-star range guys. So Amari is a guy I've seen. So he's a guy that was actually in our district. He was in DeSoto as a younger kid. So you got to see him develop over the last few years. But he's a beast. He reminds me a lot of a guy like Shamar Turner that we have here. I think Amari, because Amari is a basketball player and Shamar is not. Shamar is about 280 pounds now. I don't think Amari is going to weigh more than 250 by the time he graduates, just because he also plays basketball. But I do think he's a guy that ultimately is likely going to end up being a super athletic three technique or something like that. But no, he's a big time guy. To be starting at a place like Duncanville as a sophomore lets you know how talented he is. And it's going to be a fight for Texas fans. I know his dad is really, really high on the SEC. But Amari himself actually grew up an Oklahoma fan. So Texas is going to have a fight there for Abor.
True. The next guy we have is one of your favorites, Denver Harris out of North Shore, the cornerback who started for North Shore. What was it? As a freshman, I believe?
He was playing as a freshman. Yeah, he was out there.
He's 6'1", 180 right now. And the dude is long. He is strong. The size of his size allows him to be your boundary cornerback. He has long arms to be able to throw off bigger wide receivers. He is strong enough to take them on. He can play. He's fast enough though to be a zone cornerback as well. So you can have him at man or at zone, up on the line, back. He's very instinctive. He's also very athletic. So he, as I said, he can play off the line and still make it down or play at man and make it back. He does everything. Now they have him as a mid 4-star at number 22 of 95 overall is what they have him at.
Yeah, that's 5-star range.
But I'm with you, Darius. I think this is a guy who is a pretty special player.
Yeah, on my whole personal list, I was his 247's got him the sixth best player in Texas. I think he's the second best player in the class behind Ewers. I think Denver Harris currently right now is the best cornerback in Texas, regardless of class. He looks like, if you see the kid in person, he looks like an NFL cornerback already. He's a prototype from the height, weight, speed standpoint. He's got fluid hips. I think this one's really simple. He's an elite prospect, and some good news here from Texas fans. From what I understand, Denver Harris comes from a family of Longhorn fans. Texas, and that doesn't mean as much as it used to with Texas right now.
So did DeMarvian Leal.
Yeah. But yeah, Denver Harris apparently is high on Texas. Texas has an opportunity, especially with Coach Valet. They got an opportunity here to land this guy. So
is it put Valet
a star
or
by
Valet?
Denver Harris. Valet.
Valet, okay.
The kid's been calling Valet.
Okay. That makes sense.
So yeah.
That makes sense. I'm bad with names. The next guy we have on this list is Kelvin Banks. He is a offensive tackle out of Summer Creek in Humble, Texas. 6'4". Maybe a little taller, 285 pounds. The dude looks like he could play in college right now. Now, can he is another question. He seems to be a little, a little fuzzy on the basics, the fundamentals of the position, but this dude is a prototypical left tackle.
No, he's an athlete. He's super athletic to be the legit 6'4", 6'5", 280 that he is already at 15, 16 years old. He was a guy that committed to Oklahoma State really early. I think he committed back in September of last year. He visited Texas campus for a game last year with Cam Dewberry and Denver Harris. So he's been on campus. He's a guy that Texas has been recruiting for a while. Herb Hand has been talking to him for a while. They made the move to offer him a few months ago. But Kelvin Banks is a guy whose stock really took off. I can't remember which camp it was. Well, I want to say it was there was a camp that went on. What's this? July? It happened in May. And Kelvin Banks was out there stoning folks, and his stock word got out, and a bunch of other offers came in. So to no surprise, he decommitted from Oklahoma State, and he's going to be a guy that all the big dogs are coming at. But right now, from what I understand, Texas A&M has been in really hard with him. A&M was the perceived leader right there for him right now. But Texas has been recruiting Kelvin Banks. He's very familiar with Coach Hand. He's been on campus before. Texas is going to be in that fight, but they're going to have to fight for that one.
Yeah, he's a guy that they for sure want. He's a top offensive tackle in the state and in the nation. And
speaking of Dewberry, Cam Dewberry was not on this list.
I know. When you said that, I was like, huh.
Yeah, Dewberry's not on this list. Armani Winfield from Louisville is not on this list. Bear Alexander from Skyline is not on this list. RJ Cooper from Martin. My rankings are better. But anyway, keep going.
So we're outside of the 5-star range at this point. Now,
finally,
Kelvin
but that's
Banks.
Seven five stars in Texas for the 2022 class so far.
That's number 24. That's past what the perceived 5-star range would be in 24/7. And most rankings. Now we're into high 4-star. So B.J. Allen. B.J. Allen is at number, 28 in the nation? 48. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of a precipitous drop between there. But B.J. Allen out of Aledo, when I first saw him, right now he is a commit to LSU. When I see him, I kind of see like a quarterback turned safety, and that seems to be the case. He was a quarterback first, but he's a smart sort of field general back there. He's a very long, lean player and very athletic. He is a guy who he's what you want as a safety guy who's probably going to become 200 pounds, around 6 foot, and is your field general. That's what you have in B.J. Allen.
Yeah, no, B.J. Allen, he's a safety that I think, and what makes him so special from that position, I think he's got the ability to be a guy that plays center field type spot, or he can be a guy that you roll down into the box. He's versatile. He's athletic enough to cover guys in the slot. I just think he can. There's nothing he can't do. And unfortunately, LSU, coming off the year they had, they came in here and they picked off the top two rated safeties in the class. In Texas so far, but no, B.J. Allen's big time. He has been on Texas campus. He's very familiar with Texas. Texas is still in contact with him, and of course, it's still so early. Things could change, but he's currently committed, but Texas is going to keep chipping away there. I think he'll be back on campus before signing day, no doubt.
Right. So we have the next player, another defensive back, Jalen Gilbo. Gilbo? Mm-hmm. Gilbo?
Yep, Gilbo.
Gilbo. Out of Memorial in Port Arthur.
That's good news.
That's pretty good news. That's good for Texas. Mm-hmm. A guy who would probably be more your field side corner. He's sitting right now at a 5'11 and a half official from the national, from the opening. Not a great 40 at 4'8'2, but
it was a bad day.
Yeah, it seems like it was a bad day. We'll see. Yeah, but he has a 6'2 wingspan, two-sport athlete, runs the 400-meter in track, so I would assume that is a bad day. It has the length of a corner. He's got the speed for the corner. He's got the athleticism. He's got great feet. He's got fancy feet, man.
Mm-hmm. No, just watch Gilbo. Watch how he can mirror guys. You watch those jackhammer feet. I wouldn't trip on that 40 time at all. You know, we don't know. If it was wet outside, he slipped. We don't know. It just gets recorded, and the kids don't. I wouldn't trip on that at all. But watch the tape there. Jalen Gilbo is a guy that, I think he's best as a field corner as well. But I also think he can slide into the nickel if need be as well with his athleticism. And, yeah, Gilbo, from everything I hear, Gilbo is a guy that Texas should be feeling good about. And he comes from a school that's been very good to Texas in the past. So that's another guy. I put a star by Jalen Gilbo. Denver Harris, Jalen Gilbo. I think those are guys Texas fans should start familiarizing themselves with. Why was that word so hard?
No worries. The next player we have is a guy who is already committed to Oklahoma, Kobe McKenzie, out of Cooper in Lubbock, Texas. He is, number 60 in the nation. Darius, you really like this kid. He's 6'3", 230 pounds. He is the guy who you want as your linebacker in the Big 12. He is fast. Mm-hmm. He is physical. He's going to be a problem for Texas.
Yep, that's a Mike. That's a Mike backer there. That's a guy that's already, he's legitimate, 6'3", 230, 235. He's already at 16, 15, 16 years old. He's legitimate, 4'6", 40 guy as well. He can fly sideline to sideline. And, I think he's a special player. He shows some special ability on tape. And unfortunately, Oklahoma got in there. He was committed to Texas Tech as a freshman, being from Lubbock, and he ended up switching his commitment over to Oklahoma. Just looking at that, you know, that kind of makes me think that, hey, he still might not have made his final decision. But no, Kobe McKenzie is a beast. I think 247 has him a little bit underrated right now. He's a top five player in the state for me right now in a loaded class.
Right. Another player that makes me think I like your list better than this one is Jaden Blue, the running back out of Klein Kane, Texas, in Houston, Texas. This kid is a monster on the field. To have him at number 69, while it is a funny number, is a travesty because I think this kid is probably one of the better running backs in the nation at this point. The dude has a crazy good center of balance. He is fast. He is able to hit holes really, really well. He's got great vision. And again, fancy feet, dude. That's all that you want in a running back, and he's got every single thing. I don't know why he's so far back, but I really like what Jaden Blue has.
I think they might be knocking him for height. He's about 5'8 and a half, 5'9, even though I don't think that really matters at running back. He's already about 190, 195 pounds, really thickly, solidly built kid. Jaden Blue compares favorably, in my mind, to a guy like LJ Johnson in the 2021 class. I think Jaden Blue's big time. More good news for Texas here. Texas offered him early. They were on him early. He's a fan of Texas. He wears Texas stuff all the time. I believe he may have some family connections to Louisiana. I do know he likes LSU as well, and they did offer a little bit after Texas did, but I will put a star down by Jaden Blue. I think Texas and LSU are two of the favorites there for him early, but that is I'm a big fan of Jaden Blue.
The next player we have on this list is Tavarius Jones out of El Paso, the number 72 player in the nation. Usually don't get too many players from El Paso hitting the top 100. I don't know the last time that happened, but he's a running back at maybe a little under 6 foot, 190. Dwarfs kids in El Paso. That kid is just a league above other players in El Paso, and the film proves it. Darius, what do you think of, I guess you haven't seen him live, but what do you think of Tavarius Jones?
No, I haven't seen him live, but I'm trying to think who the last guy from El Paso is I heard about. Was it maybe MJ McFarland? Andre
That's
Jones,
a hell of a long time ago.
From a while back that made it to Texas. But no, the Texas offered Tavarius Jones like way back in, I want to say like October of last season, and he didn't have any offers. They were his first offer. And since then, he's picked up an Alabama offer, and Alabama's recruiting him hard. Tavarius Jones is a guy, I mean, he's a little bit tough to evaluate because, you know, the competition isn't great out there. But, I mean, it's hard to punish a guy for doing what he's supposed to do against inferior competition. And, I mean, he looks like he's got elite acceleration and top-end speed. They line that dude up at receiver. He can run routes. You see him making over-the-shoulder catches, diving catches. I think Jones is big time, and Texas was his first offer. You don't hear it very often with Texas being the very first to offer somebody. I think that could be something that pays off for them in the future. But I would feel very comfortable right now betting a lot of money that they end up with one of the top two backs in the 2022 class, whether that be Jadon Blue or Tavarius Jones.
Right, or both, hopefully. So the next player you have.
I think we might have to settle for one after they see Bijan. That's okay.
Dave, Rashawn Johnson, you always sleep on him, man. I am an underdog fan here, and I want Rashawn Johnson to do well.
It's a good problem to have. It's a good problem to have. When Keontae Ingram sprains his ankle again, Rashawn will be right there.
He's already nursing a hamstring after what is the first real day of activity.
Is he already? I'm not surprised. He's got that type of, seems like just one of those guys, man. Just soft tissue, you know, it's just how it goes sometimes for some people.
Now, but, the next player right, you have going. In Texas on this list is Bryce Anderson, the number 86 player in the nation, committed to LSU. Darius, it seems like you are pretty on par with this. I mean, you have him as a number 16 player in Texas. They have him as a number 16 player in Texas.
Oh, nice.
So, you know, he's who is, you know, he plays big. He is a guy who you probably would put down into the box more so than be a prowler in the backfield. But a guy who, again, you know, he's a plus. He's definitely a plus coverage guy. Darius, what are your thoughts on Bryce Anderson?
I think pound for pound, he's one of the best players in Texas, regardless of class right now. He stars at quarterback for Westbrook, but in crunch time when they need him, they put him back there at safety too. I think he's got tremendous instincts and ball skills. The guy he reminds me a lot about, I don't know if you remember this guy, but he wasn't just 2019. If you remember from Mansfield, I want to say that's Legacy. Remember Jalen Catalan ended up choosing Arkansas over Texas? Bryce Anderson reminds me a lot of Jalen Catalan. I think he's that type of player. Well, I like Bryce Anderson, but unfortunately, I think he's locked in with LSU.
Yeah, he committed a long time ago, pretty locked in, yeah. Mm-hmm. The next player you got here is Donovan Green, a tight end out of Dickinson. And the last tight end out of Dickinson was Jalen Weidermeyer. And Texas completely whiffed there. They didn't even offer him, and he went to A&M, and he blew up, as people predicted. Now they have another guy out of Dickinson, tight end, Donovan Green. He's got offers from everywhere, including Texas and Texas A&M. Hopefully Texas doesn't pass on this one. Now, he's a lot higher rated than Jalen Weidermeyer was. So this is a guy to keep an eye on here. I think it's A&M probably has a foothold here, seeing as they also have Jalen Weidermeyer, who is, you know, another tight end from Dickinson. He probably can see himself in his shoes there. But Texas, probably you want this kid.
Yeah, I mean, he's a rarity. After there not really being much, by the way, of tight end position in the last few years, with Donovan Green and another guy that didn't make this top 100 list, a guy named Trent McGahee at Shadow Creek in Pearland. I think those are two guys that they're rarities. They're true two-way tight ends. They contribute in the pass game. They contribute in the running game, which is rare. Donovan Green is a guy that's been on varsity since his freshman year, so his name has been out there. He's got offers from everybody. I think Texas,
they're not paying attention to him as much as they should.
I mean, they've offered him. I just don't feel like Texas has as much to sell as far as production and development at the position as some other places. I think it's going to be hard. It's going to be difficult there. And with the ties to A&M, and there's another guy that made the list that you talk about in a second. The next guy that's from Dickinson, his teammate, Texas hasn't offered him at all. Right. So that's not going to help either. Yeah,
P.J. Williams.
P.J. Williams, who I'm not super familiar with. But it's hard for me to get too excited there for Texas fans because I have a hard time seeing that one happen. But Donovan Green, I really like Donovan Green as a prospect, as a player. I think he can be a guy he's probably going to be best as an H-back type of guy. But I like him a lot. I'm a fan of Donovan Green.
Right. And then the last player you have on here is Chase Biddle at number 100. Darius, I'm not familiar very much with Chase Biddle. I know Texas has been on him a lot. What do you think of Chase Biddle?
I think Chase Biddle is a real deal. He's a guy he's a clear defensive back. Texas is also recruiting his teammate who's also in the 2022 class, Jordan Hudson. I think they're both of those guys are being recruited as defensive backs. I think Jordan more so as a corner and Chase as a safety. But when you watch his highlights, when you watch a Garland game, he stands out immediately. It seems like, you know, when the ball is going somewhere, Chase is moving at a different speed than everybody else on defense. And he's a guy that had early offers. He picked up early offers from both Texas and Oklahoma. Man, Texas, I mean, let me see, the last Garland guy was that Adrian Phillips in my class? Adrian Phillips, Tevin Jackson.
I wish there was an easy way to look that up.
I think it is, man. But I think Texas something – there could be something here with Biddle and Hudson. I do think they truly could be a package deal. But they got in early with these guys. So I think that's another guy. Put a star by Chase Biddle. I think he's every bit. He deserved that ranking. He's a top 100 player in the nation. He's big time.
Right. And then there are other guys who are just missing from the list. One of the guys I'm looking at, Bear Alexander, the defensive tackle. Mm-hmm.
I can understand that a little bit, Will, because he didn't get to play this past year, you know? So they haven't seen him. But I saw that guy not too long ago. I was kind of concerned he would be overweight. But no, Alexander's in great shape right now. And apparently he's going to drop a top 10. He tweeted he's going to drop his top 10 in the next couple of days. Texas will be in there. But I am interested to see what he looks like if we can have a season finally this year. But it's going to be tough for him, Will. If we don't have a season, that's going to be two straight years of him not having any film.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I understand that the ranking omission. I get that there. But no, that's another guy. But it's just
Cameron Dewberry, Armani Winfield.
So I'm not as high on Cam Dewberry as a lot of other places. I mean, I've got him. He's in my top. What number is he? He's number 14 overall, Will, but he's the fourth best offensive lineman. Like I'm kind of surprised somebody else is kind of seeing that. I wasn't super impressed with Cam Dewberry.
I'm trying to look up Harold Perkins right now.
He's from Cy Park High School down there in Houston, Cypress area. Check him out.
Well, it makes sense that he's not high because he's a linebacker from Texas. There's usually only one person who in Texas as a linebacker who gets any sort of love. Texas hasn't really kicked out linebackers like crazy.
No, Perkins though, take a look at those clips. Perkins is a 2-3 clip guy. You can see that. you can see that pretty fast. But he's got pretty much the whole SEC's on him now. Oklahoma's on him. Texas has offered him now. I don't know where Perkins stands. He strikes me though as a guy that probably wants to play in the SEC.
Yeah, he's a plus. He looks like he's plus in coverage. He's super
quick.
You
see him? Yeah, he's dropping folks. Yeah, he's big time.
So there's a lot of players in this list that probably are going to be making their ways up and out of the list. But that's our thoughts on them and where Texas stands currently. On that note, though, I think we're going to end it off there. This has been 4th and 5, your Longhorn Nation podcast. I've been your host, Will Baizer. You guys can find me on Twitter at WILLBAIZER. Darius, my man, where can we find you?
Y'all can find me on Twitter as well, DTERRELL05. Hey, hit me up. I've conversed with many a Texas fan in my DMs and in my mentions over the past few months. If you've got any questions about anything, please feel free to reach out about either the website or the podcast or just anything in general. Reach out to me. I'll respond to you as quickly as I can.
Exactly. And you guys can find both of us and our works on texas.thefootballbrainiacs.com. That is texas.thefootballbrainiacs.com. Or you guys can find our other podcasts and our past episodes on the Hornscast channel. It's the Hornscast channel on any podcasting platform out there. On that note, thank y'all for listening. We'll see y'all next week. Hook 'em.
Hook 'em.